And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces on KTAL LP with Daisy Maldonado and Peter Goodman co-hosting today. And we have the honor of speaking with Amu Devasthali this hour. She's a painter and a printmaker and a philanthropist and an NMSU regent for at least the next couple of years, two or three. I don't know if you can go for a second term or would.
This is my second term.
Oh, this is?
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. I knew you'd been there since. Are you term limited?
No. I did a four-year term to finish somebody's another regent who didn't complete the term. And then the governor reappointed me for another 6 years.
Gotcha.
So I'm done, I believe, by the end of 28.
And you're originally from India.
That's correct.
And then by way of Moscow and a few other places, turned up here. When you were a kid, would you have envisioned where you are now?
I wouldn't have envisioned that I would be in Las Cruces.
Most people in the U.S. wouldn't either.
Yeah. That is so true, because when we moved here from Chicago and sent Christmas cards to people, they were like, we didn't know you were moving to Mexico. Why didn't you tell us you were moving to Mexico?
Yeah,
I wouldn't have imagined that. But I had always had this vision of traveling the world, and we did do that. So,
and you were initially, as I was, by the way, kind of in youth, fascinated with the Russian language?
Yes.
How did that even come to you?
Well, I am the youngest of four, and so we have a doctor, an engineer, a scientist in the family, and when it came to my turn, I was at that age where I wanted to do something different and be rebellious. And so an uncle of mine had been working on a hydroelectric project in Russia at that time. And he came back and he kind of told me all these stories about how wonderful it is there and all that. And I had always liked languages and had an affinity for languages. And so I decided that I would learn Russian. And so it was being taught at Jawaharlal Nehru University in Delhi. It had School of Languages. And so I got my bachelor's in Russian language. And then was sent by the university. Every year, three of the top students were sent on an exchange program to Moscow State University. And so I was sent to do my master's PhD.
Where, by the way, did you grow up in India?
My family's originally from the south, from Bangalore. But I grew up in the north because my father was a mining engineer. And so he worked for the government, and he was stationed at different places where there were mines. And he primarily spent a lot of his career in the coal mines. So that's up north.
Where?
Bihar. Which is not even called Bihar anymore. Jharkhand, I think they've changed the name.
They've changed a lot of names.
They split the state in two, and yeah.
So when you got to Moscow, what did you study there for your master's in PhD?
Soviet literature.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I did my, it was a master's PhD program, so it was a five-year. And so I did my master's and PhD in Soviet literature with a focus on one particular poet that I wrote my thesis on.
So the phrase Soviet literature makes me want to ask the next question. I mean, did they even still pay attention to Dostoevsky?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
We had to, for your first step for your PhD, for the qualifiers, we had to read 200 books literary works. And Dostoevsky was definitely one of them. I have to say that reading literature in the language in which it is originally written, it's such a gift, because there is a lot that's lost in translation.
Well, I envy you that. I think I read Camus, The Stranger, in French as a kid, but not really. I mean, I got through it, but I didn't really feel the joy of really understanding it.
Sure.
Wish I had the Spanish to read Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be amazing. But when you're in the country, immersed in the language and the culture, and you're reading a piece of literature, it's a different feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking that you probably understand the context more,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
And I could imagine, just as a young person traveling from India to Moscow, how different, I mean, just from the weather alone, but just the culture. What surprised you the most when you got there?
I knew it was a cold country, right? But I had no idea how cold it could get. And coming from India, where, you know, there are times of the year when it's cold, but nothing like the cold there. So, that was the most surprising. But all of our teachers in India were from Russia, all of our professors.
Okay. Yeah.
So we felt very much at home. And the Russian people are very warm, and they are very welcoming of especially young students that are coming from countries that are warm countries, and they know that we have a hard time adjusting. So they pay a lot of attention. So if we didn't show up in a class, they would come to the dorm to make sure that we are okay, because, you know, they knew that we could get sick, or we just didn't feel like we could get out in the cold or whatever.
Yeah.
And then once you got here, you got deeply addicted to printmaking and painting.
Yes, well,
how did that happen?
I had always been interested in the arts, but I never thought that I would get a degree, like I'd get any kind of formal training, because my focus had always been on linguistics. But when we came here, my husband and I and our one-year-old, not yet one-year-old little girl, he had to go through the 6 months of taking all the exams.
He's a physician, we should tell people.
He's the retired radiologist. And so he got his internship and in residency in Chicago. So when we came here, we stayed with my sister in San Antonio for 6 months while he took all his exams. And then we moved to Chicago, another cold, cold place. And when in Chicago, I couldn't do anything with my Russian training at all. First of all, I had a little baby, and we didn't have enough money to get somebody to take care of the baby, so I had to stay home. But when we moved here, I saw the opportunity to do something, and I went and visited with a Russian professor. There was one person who taught Russian at the university, and she told me, we are in the process of phasing out Russian. We are not going to teach Russian anymore, which was a big blow to me. And 6 months after I came, they did shut down the Russian program. Mm. So I knew that I didn't have any opportunities here. I tried the high schools, and there were all kinds of restrictions in the high schools. So, and since I was always interested in the arts, I decided to start taking classes in the art department, and took so many that the head of the department called me and said, you either convert all these credits into a degree, or I can't let you take any more classes. Yeah. So I did. I converted it into a master's in printmaking, and then did another master's in painting.
Who are your favorite painters?
Well, I, I like the realistic style of painting, but so a lot of my work is centered on the Mughal miniature painting style. Hmm. So I had some of the some of my favorite painters were painters like Matisse, and who paid a lot of attention to detail.
Yes.
Matisse is one of my favorites. I do like Van Gogh and Gauguin a lot, just because of this subject matter. When it comes to the classics, of course, I like all the Renaissance era painters.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty amazing, because you were an adult, right, deciding to then, try painting and art and stuff. And, most people, it's something that they discover when they're young. So were you surprised also by that?
I always did paint and draw.
Uh-huh.
I'd make cards for family and stuff like that, but I didn't have any kind of formal training. And the nice thing about taking classes like this at the university is you also can take photography classes, mm-hmm. and you can take ceramics, you know, mm-hmm. you can take other things. And you realize that you have an interest, like I kind of transitioned into jewelry design.
Okay.
When I graduated and sculpture, mm-hmm. which I did not do, take sculpture in college at NMSU, but I really enjoyed the meditative nature of sculpting. Mm-hmm. So I sculpted a lot. I just, you know, have not been doing a lot of art lately, A, because I think being a regent really sucks up all the oxygen in many ways. So I haven't really had the opportunity, but I love art. I love going to the art shows here in town.
And you had a gallery. Do you still? Or?
No, I don't. Okay. No. I had one on Lohmann for a while. And actually, it was something that I started because I bought a printing press. And I know a lot of printmakers, once they leave school, they don't have access to a printing press. Mm. And so I thought that it would be a good co-op kind of thing where people could come and print. And so I ran that for about 3 years, and then I shut that down.
One of the things that seems to mark your life is a combination of being productive, but also kind of doing good things. I mean, you're obviously with the Community Foundation and you're a philanthropist, but you mentioned the printmaking to kind of help printmakers have access to a printer. Where did that come from in you?
I think it came from my parents. My father being a mining engineer, the conditions for miners back home are pretty bad. And my mother felt that it was her part of what she did to support my dad was to go into the mining colonies and do things to help the miners. So she would do little fundraisers, and she would always take us along to see. And she had this philosophy that just because you have everything that you, and we were not rich by any means, but we were very comfortable. And she would say, just because you have everything that you need, it doesn't mean that everybody else does. So you really have to go and see how the other side lives in order to appreciate the struggles.
She sounds like the mother in Little Women. Going the other direction, in a sense, what would you say to young people about how to combine productivity and doing good in their lives?
I think they really need to understand that it's not about how much you give. It's that you give. And by give, I mean it doesn't have to be in dollars. It can be you give of your knowledge, you give of your time, right? And everybody can do that. Everybody can give a little time to something. They may not, as students, they may not be able to give money, right? And that, but that doesn't matter. You, if you are a, say you are in the business college, you can help somebody that is having problems with some account, personal accounting, taxes, things like that. There are things that you can do to help people. You just have to find where those needs are, identify those needs, and see what you can do to meet those needs.
Being a regent at NMSU, what has surprised you most about doing that?
I think what has surprised me most is the time commitment, the amount of time that it takes. And particularly for the regents that live here, right?
Sure.
Because regents are from all over the state. And for the longest time, the student regent and I were the only two regents that lived in Las Cruces.
Oh, wow.
Till last year, in fact. And then we got one more regent from Las Cruces. And I always felt that the student regents, their primary focus needs to be, of course, representing the students, but their primary focus is to study and to graduate on time. And so I always felt like you couldn't put too much on the students. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful of what you demand of them. So, you know, NMSU Regents, and I'm sure it's true of UNM, we are not like other governing bodies at other universities. We provide more than oversight. Mm-hmm. We really are part of the structure, and we are not in the nitty gritty of curriculum and that kind of stuff. But we are very involved in and very visible on campus. So when there's any events on campus, they always invite the regents. And our cohort of regents, when we came in, we made a commitment that if nothing else, we will show up.
Mm.
So we showed up at events, at openings, at ribbon cuttings, at groundbreaking, whatever, just so people understood that we are with them, we are on their side, we are working for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I could just dig in a little deeper just in terms of the role of the regent. And so you talked about oversight. And so you all meet regularly. You make decisions on policies or direction of the university.
That's right.
More on that.
So regents are appointed for a term of 6 years, student regents for a term of 2 years. And the terms are staggered so that there's continuity. And the governor appoints the regents. And what we do primarily is set policy and provide oversight. Now, that provide oversight piece covers a lot. So we hire and have the power to fire the president, mm-hmm. so hiring and firing of the president. Then we set tuition and fees. We have a lot of real estate holdings, being a land-grant institution. So we also are involved with transactions, land transactions. We approve new courses. We approve the removal of courses that are no longer necessary. So that's the kind of, and we approve the budget, which is a big piece. We approve the budget.
Yeah.
We are also actively involved in the planning of our strategic plan. So right now we are deeply, we are involved in that because our LEADS 2025, which was our strategic plan, came to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the process of writing our new strategic plan, which means a lot of background work. We've had town halls, we've had interviews and meetings with stakeholders, external and internal. And we are now in the process of compiling all that information that we have gathered, because as a land grant, we serve the state, right? So we need to know what the needs are from the general public as well as our internal stakeholders. So that's the process we are in right now, and we are compiling all that information that has been collected, and then we will start the serious conversation of what the vision is going to look like moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
If I asked you, just generally at this point, to give us a kind of state of the university summary, mm-hmm. where are we? What's good? What's bad? What are you most hopeful or worried about? What would you say?
I think right now the state of the university is really good. It's really strong. We went through some rocky times, but we are not looking back. We want to look forward. We have a new president who is very committed. He comes from...
My wife and I thought you made a great choice there, by the way.
Thank you. And he comes from an academic background.
Yes.
So he came up through the ranks,
yes.
right? And so he knows exactly how
Italian
each
poets,
piece...
Yes,
yes. And he knows exactly how each piece works, right? He has been a professor, he's been a dean, he's been a provost, and now he's the president. So he really understands how every one of those demographics, why they think the way they think or why they feel the way they do, which is very important for a president to have that. We are in the process of finalizing on our provost, because we have an interim mm-hmm. provost now. Hopefully by the end of the semester we'll have the new provost in place. We just recently hired a new AD who is absolutely
yes.
fantastic.
I don't
know if
you met
him.
I have not met him yet.
But yes, you should.
I don't know whether to worry or otherwise about the fact he's I think canned three people already who were here.
That's not unusual at all. That's okay. When a new AD comes, they have a different direction that they have in mind, and they try to assess the resources that they have and how to distribute those resources in the best possible way. And so he is doing what he feels is the best thing to
do. I'm sure he is. I didn't mean to say I don't know whether to be pleased or displeased because I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, he's very young and has a lot of energy. And he has a real vision for where he wants to see athletics go. He's also a very ethical person. We really wanted that. Mm. And so we are very pleased at the direction in which we are going. And, you know, as a land-grant institution, our mission moving forward, even with our strategic plan, is to always keep in mind that we are here to educate the population of the working person in this state, right? The research that we produce has to be extended out into the community. It is to benefit the state and all the stakeholders in the state. And public service is a big part of what we do. In fact, we just yesterday got the Carnegie designation for community engagement, which is a huge feather in our cap. The last time we got it was in 2015. And
tell folks just about yesterday. That. What is the Carnegie?
So the Carnegie designation for community involvement, what it means is, what do you do to benefit the community? So that is embedded in our mission as it is, right? So through our extension services that we have a presence, NMSU has a presence in all 33 counties in the state. So even though we are in the southern part of the state, we really do have a presence in every single county through our extension services, through our ag experiment stations. We have 12 ag experiment stations and 33 county extension offices. So we are, you know, when they had the fires, the really big fires up in Mora and Santa Fe and all that, it was our extension offices that were helping people with finding accommodation, finding feed for their cattle that were running off of the mountains and crossing the highway because they were running away from the fire. Our extension offices were really, really involved in all of that. So we are very much part of the community. And that is just, our extension is just one part of it. Then all of our research is extended out to our farmers, to our ranchers, the AI research that we are doing and things like that. Farmers use that technology in what is called virtual fencing. Have you heard of virtual fencing? So you have these devices that are on collars on the cattle, and you can track where your cattle are at all times. It doesn't necessarily involve a physical fence. And if they get too close to some place that that they aren't supposed to cross, they can get a little shock that tells them you can't do that. And I can tell you a funny story. I have a friend who's a rancher, and he runs about 300 head of cattle on his ranch. And he said one time he saw on his monitor that this cattle was, one cow was moving at this terrific speed. And he was like, there's no way that this cow is. So he sent one of his ranch hands to look. Somebody was stealing his cow, was in the back of a truck, and he was driving away.
Wow.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, so those are the ways in which we actually touch the community. We are very active with 4-H. We have one of their offices is here on campus. We are actively involved with them. When the new president came, he did not come from a land-grant institution.
Right.
So we wanted to make sure that he understood what we do here. So we sent him, took him on a tour of all 33 counties, extension offices, and all of our science experiment stations. So I went on two of those tours with him. One was a week long and another one was a 2-day tour. And it was amazing because some of these counties are so small, and I would have never gone there otherwise if not for this tour. They have a population of 650 people graduating high school, a class of the graduating class is 7 students. Mm. And we learned about what their needs are. Mm-hmm. For instance, some of them were like, the parents told us, well, you know, we have these small counties and small communities, and our children, when they leave and they go to the big city of Las Cruces, they have a hard time adjusting. Mm. So we need some adjustment in your wraparound services so that our kids also feel accepted and welcome on campus. So we are thinking about, how do we do that? How do we address that specific need for those kids that are coming from these remote communities and feel intimidated when they come onto campus with so many people, and there's all this activity and, you know, all these new professors.
And what are we going to do to...
Right.
What are we going to do? Are we going to try a buddy system, or
we are in the process of planning some things in the student success unit that works with students, the Office of Student Success. That unit, they are looking at what can we do. Well, buddy system can be one thing, mm-hmm. right? We can make sure that we have safe spaces for them to mm-hmm. gather, so that they know that they can talk mm-hmm. to each other and share experiences and say, well, this happened to me, but you know what? Maybe there's another way of dealing with this. Also, be more accessible. As the professors should be more accessible to these students, so they can come and talk to them, and so that they don't struggle to the point that they're like, I can't do this, I'm going back home. To try and break that before they get to that stage. Mm-hmm. So we are really hopeful that we are going to be able to help those kids. I shouldn't say kids, because they are little adults.
Well, yeah. You also have adults in a lot of adults in the NMSU Global.
Yes.
The internet program. I hear that's going well.
It's going very well. We have a 30% increase in enrollment. I heard 2 days ago.
And I think you're having increases every year in regular on-campus enrollment.
I think that's the best thing that we, as Regents, decided that we would support. You know, New Mexico is such a vast state geographically, mm-hmm. and it's sparsely populated. Mm-hmm. So we have all these remote ranches and farms where the children have to be there to work the land. They can't leave and come to Las Cruces right. and stay in a dorm and do that work. But NMSU Global, being our mm-hmm. online platform, can take education to them. It also applies to our Native communities. A lot of Native communities don't want their children to leave.
Yeah.
And move out, right? So you can bring education to them. And it's not just a degree. It's not just a bachelor's degree or a master's degree. If you have some kind of qualification already, say, for instance, you are in a radiology tech program, right? Mm-hmm. You can take online classes, and you can add medallions or additional qualifications to that. So you can stack qualifications. Mm. And NMSU Global does that. It has really made education accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
So, and I can understand why people see the attraction in that.
And it's helped a lot of people who maybe started their career and then, whoops, we have 2 kids now. I can't
yes.
go to class. So it's now, one of my pet thoughts about NMSU and what it should have a lot of is international students. Cause I had a lot of Kuwaiti friends and others mm-hmm. when I was there. And I see from the annual foreign students event, I don't know what it's called, that they do down by Brannigan. Mm-hmm. Every year, that there still are quite a few. Is that something the university is consciously trying to do a lot of, have international? Because I think it enriches the culture for everybody.
It absolutely does. Unfortunately, even the students that we have admitted into the university are having trouble getting visas. And so our international student population has dropped.
Ouch.
I don't know what we can do about it because, you know, it's kind of out of our hands. Where I actually went with the chancellor of NMSU Global on a trip to India to do some recruiting. And we recruited so many students. And they just, you know, part of the attraction was they could stay in India. They could do, they can take classes online. And the last year they come here and they get to do it. Work for 1 year, and then they get a degree from an American university, which is very attractive to students coming from other countries. Unfortunately, we have not been, you know, there's not much we can do when it comes to the visa situation. So we're just waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. You know, and if I could sort of take this in a different direction, I was just curious about, you know, recently the NMSU graduate students had took some issue, right, with their pay and other things. And so how did the regents figure into that resolution, and how are they working with the graduate students?
The regents don't directly work with the graduate students because there's a union now, and so there's those union negotiations happen between the lawyers on each side. But the regents have always been supportive of higher salaries for reimbursements for graduate students. It also extends to higher salaries for our faculty.
Right. I hope
because
so.
You know, our graduate students are not only do they not get paid at the same level as some of our peer institutions, they also don't get tuition remission, which is something that we have really been focused on trying to get for all of our students, because if they don't get that and they're totally dependent on whatever salary they're making as graduate assistants or something, it just is not enough to stretch. It's not, right?
Right.
So what can we do to help them with that? We have come up with some other means of providing them with some additional funds so that they can buy health insurance. That's the other thing. Health insurance is a big part of this. So when it comes to union negotiations, we really cannot get in the middle of that. So we have to stay out of it, but we are very supportive of the students. In fact, we went to the legislature 2 years ago and really lobbied for a higher salary. And we got some, but it wasn't just not enough. And when you go and ask, they always say, well, what about the other graduate students of the other institutions? And we are interested in our students. Of course, we want for everybody, but our focus is our students.
Right.
So they did give appropriate a certain amount of money for all graduate students, but it just wasn't enough.
Don't want to get you in trouble here, but your response to the question about international students suggests a follow-up question. How is the current administration in Washington affecting NMSU, positive or negative?
Well, I can tell you this. We have had cuts in federal grants, research grants, to the tune of $24 million just for NMSU, $85 million for the entire state. That is huge. That's one of the things that we are talking to our state legislators about, who have been very helpful and very sympathetic to our needs. And so they're trying to, they can't meet all of it, but they're trying as best they can to backfill what we have lost.
I fear the current administration doesn't recognize science as being something that helps us in any way financially down the road.
Well, you know, you said it.
Yes.
I got to mind my P's and Q's.
What?
I have to mind my P's and Q's.
I understand fully. But I do also want to ask you about, and, you know, to the extent this is in litigation, I know you'll be very limited in what you can say. But, you know, we saw a problem about security for women. You know, from rape and that kind of thing, at NMSU. What's going on as far as trying to improve that situation?
Well, we have put a lot of measures in place. One of the things that we have also done is we have mandated training for all freshmen coming in on what they need to watch out for. And, you know, like that self-awareness piece, which young students coming from, especially from some of the rural areas, where they've had a safe environment and they have not really had to think about these things. Well, when they come to a university like this and there's a huge population, you have to be very self-aware. You have to be mindful that you don't put yourself in a situation that can end up being producing not good results, right? And it's hard because young people everywhere, not just here, feel that nothing bad can ever happen to them till it does. Mm-hmm. And so we are very, very mindful of that. We have increased security measures in terms of swipe cards in dorms and all that. We've always had that. But, you know, we are making sure that everything is functioning the way it should be functioning. So if something breaks down, that it's taken care of right away, that kind of thing. And the training piece has been putting warning signs, even in the laundry rooms and in the common areas, in the dorms, giving them the information on what are the resources available to you. If something happens, you need to call somebody. These are the phone numbers that you can reach. So those are some of the measures that we had in place, but we are reinforcing them. We are trying to make them more accessible, more visible, where students can actually see that in their face all the time. They can see these signs that say you can call this number. So those are some of the things that we are doing, and the training piece is a big part of it.
Yeah, and if I could just push back on that just a little bit, you know, because it does sound like you're asking victims to be more protective of their person when we know, right, that sexual assault happens because perpetrators decide that they're going to go do something to somebody else.
Right.
And so what is a university then doing when they know that a party, for instance, is being thrown by a choice student group, and there's certainly potential, right, for sexual assault to happen at that party.
Right. So, you know, it is very difficult to regulate behavior, right? I mean, you have to just make people aware that these are the consequences that can happen, and so be really careful. Take care of yourself.
Well, right, but so then what is a disincentive, right, for the perpetrators to then engage in that behavior?
Well,
are there consequences? When
there are definitely consequences. Okay. There are definite consequences for perpetrators. Once they are identified, there are definite consequences. But we have to also be very mindful that people have rights. Right? So we have to make sure that there's an investigation, that the right people are taken to task. We have to be very careful about it doesn't happen overnight. And there's a process. Mm-hmm. There's a reporting process. You report through that reporting structure, and those investigations happen. So that sometimes it takes more time than you would like. You want these results to be quick, but it doesn't always happen that way, because we have to be mindful of the rights of the victim as well as the perpetrator. We can't just go in and, you know, accuse somebody without getting all the facts. So we have to get all the facts. We have to do the investigation before we can take action.
I think we all thoroughly agree with that, but let me follow up a little on Daisy's question. I mean, I think we all know that in most of the world, most of those investigations have been traditionally skewed in favor of the male. What are we doing? I mean, if you disagree, tell me, but what are we doing to counteract that unfortunate presumption or trend?
I would not agree that, as far as I have seen at NMSU, that these kind of investigations are skewed to the male. I would not agree with that. I think that we are very much in the corner of the victim, at the same time, we want to make sure that we are not infringing on somebody else's rights, right? So we have to be really careful about how we do that. And, you know, these kind of things can happen to males and females. So especially nowadays, we see more people reporting. One thing we don't want to happen is to discourage people from reporting.
Right.
We do not want to discourage people from reporting. So, and re-victimizing somebody that's already been victimized, right? So we're very mindful of that. Do mistakes happen? Of course they do. They happen everywhere, right? But we try to our very best of our ability to make sure that we protect our students as much as we can. And part of that protection is telling them, you know, in addition to everything that we are doing, you also need to be careful. Make sure that you have friends when you go to a party or something. Somebody that, you look out for each other. Take care of each other.
Listener question that somebody phoned in. To what extent will a new governor, or might a new governor, affect the state institution of New Mexico State?
That's really hard to say, because right now, you know, the governor's race is not just basically, it's just starting. Mm-hmm. So we don't know in what direction it's going to go. The hope is that whoever the governor is, they will be, A, in favor of higher education, and B, that they will be supportive of the work that we are doing, and that they will be supportive of the university and the funding, that, because a huge part of our funding comes from the state. So it's really important that the executive understand the importance of higher education and the importance of the support that they give to the universities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious too, because I know that Senator Steinborn, right, is leading the way on legislation around how regents are appointed, right, by the governor, and wants to create a commission.
Right.
So I'm just curious about your thoughts on that and how that, if passed or if,
how that would impact. I don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. I think that there are certain things that are in the statute that has to be followed, right? So the governor, whichever party the governor belongs to, can appoint only three regents from that party, and the two other regents have to be from the other party. So since our governor is a Democrat, so she can appoint three Democrats, and the other two have to be either independent or Republican. Senator Steinborn's bill that he has tried, I think twice already, to pass, it's not a bad one. It's not. I mean, but the thing that I feel that may or may not work is that having regents as elected officials.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Which means at some point it'll become a campaign, it'll be money involved for a job that is a volunteer job.
Right.
I don't think elective. We also have a caller.
Sure. Oh.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Peter. This is Sally.
Hi, Sally.
Peterson. I am curious about the educational aspect of teaching boundaries and behavior and civility for incoming freshmen about the rape situation or the sexual harassment or any kind of harassment, and ongoing through the years as reminders. I remember I did my graduate work at UC Berkeley, and right before I got there, there was a ginormous hit on rapes. It was something, and if you've ever been on that campus, it's meandering through woods and creeks and dark areas like you wouldn't believe. And so they had to address so many issues about teaching people how to behave. That it, you know, and this is back in the 80s, guys. Sorry.
So is the question, what do we do or should we do in terms of basically teaching incoming freshmen civility, care for other people? And
that's right. and keep your sex to yourself, and if it's how to recognize unwanted intentions is the biggest one. You know the thing, no means no.
Right, that is part of the training. I can't do this. That is part of the part of the training that they are mandated to take. It's an online training.
Okay.
And this is, even though it is mandated for freshmen, this is the kind of training that is kind of ongoing, really, not just for freshmen. You know, our athletes are, this kind of behavioral training is reinforced for them from time to time. But you're right, you know, there is a certain, we can do things like increasing lighting on campus. In fact, ASN MSU has an ask of in the legislative session coming up where their focus is some of these safety measures for students on campus.
Wonderful.
And they can call someone to escort them if they're in a classroom late and they're afraid to walk through a dark parking lot or something. They can call somebody and somebody will come and escort them. So we have those services. And they have to be told you have to avail of those services. Those services are available. So awareness That's of right. what's available is a big piece of that. Some of them may not know what's available. So making them aware of that is a big part of that training as well.
Thank you, Sally.
You're welcome. Thank you for addressing it, because I remember it was such a big deal that, you know, it threw the whole reputation of the university in question. And so women, I know, at that time were like, do I really want to go there?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So no. I think part of it is that we do so much online that an interactive sessions might be better, like group sessions, and not necessarily huge, so that men can hear what women are saying and women can hear it from the male side.
Interactive,
interactive and better than an online thing, because I'm not an online learner. I was like, even if it's something I really love, I find myself, oh, grab your phone for a little or do that. It's too easy to get away from it. Whereas if you're in the room, you're recognizing this is another right. person and they have a point of view and they don't want their body touched or they don't want to be accused of doing something that they didn't mean.
Definitely good idea.
Okay.
Thank you.
Moving toward more interactive session sounds like a good idea in those, you know, for the reasons that Sally stated. Anything we have not asked you about and miss you that you would like to tell listeners?
We have session coming up, so we are gearing up for that. So we have some asks of the legislature. We want to create a campus that is integrated, that it's student-focused. And so in line with that, one of our big asks is going to be for an interdisciplinary building where we can have different units that can come and participate or use that facility, kind of move away from these silos where engineering students are here, business students Great. Are here, and that interaction is not happening. We want students to be able to interact with each other, so that's one of the things. We are definitely asking for help with our research facilities, PSL, Physical Science Lab. Mm. We're asking for some money for that. The AI Institute, which our new president initiated last year, we got some funding for that last year, but we need continued funding for that. Our big focus for our athletics this year is the money that we're asking for our executive suites, which includes the press box, because I don't know if y'all have been up there. It's kind of really primitive. It was built in 1978, the stadium, and not much. We've had improvements, but not really to the extent we need. And as part of Conference USA, we need to have facilities that are at least on par with our peer institutions. So we are excited to see what we can get from the legislature. And in addition, we're asking for help with where we lost funding from the federal government.
Football is an interesting issue. I always had mixed feelings because I love sports. Mm-hmm. Participated, even worked for the athletic mm-hmm. department when I was a student here with Lou Henson. But I also saw football basically demeaning academic classes and maybe taking too much. At this point, we're not a great football team, as football teams go, right. And NCAA. How much does the football take from our budget every year, or add to our budget? And how do you see that issue of, should we support it more or less?
I don't see it as taking away from academics. The way I look at it is that athletics as a whole, and football is kind of at the top of that list, mm-hmm. right? It truly is the front porch to the university. Mm-hmm. And people, I didn't really believe this when I first started here at NMSU. But people really care about athletics. It is the conduit that brings mm-hmm. the community onto campus, right? Football, basketball, all of these athletic programs, the art museum brings people, music brings people, theater brings people, like the general public is what I'm talking mm-hmm. about, right? And for the longest time, University Avenue divided the people from the university. And part of the master plan was to create a campus that opens out onto the university instead of having its back to the university. To University Avenue, right?
Yeah.
Right? And so when we started planning for new buildings, and that's why the bookstore it faces, Devastali Hall faces the university, and the museum, mm-hmm. I would love Kent Hall to face the university, but the structure is not stable. It's got a beautiful entrance, but the structure is not stable, so we cannot open those doors. So...
Congratulations on Devastali Hall,
yeah,
by the
know,
way.
Right, yeah.
I think, my wife and I went to the opening, didn't know you then, now realize how much, we noticed how much wonderful equipment there was for people, whether it was painting or printmaking or, newer forms of art that I probably don't even know about. But I see your hand in that.
But, when I went to school here, I was at Williams Hall. Mm-hmm. Williams Hall is a converted gym. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I played basketball in it a long time ago.
Did you? Did you? Because J. Paul Taylor used to tell me that he would go there to watch basketball games.
Yeah.
And we didn't have... I mean, artists make do with what they have. Mm-hmm. They know how to make do with what they have. We did things like running electrical cords and things that we were not supposed to do. We'd get cited because we were not supposed to be doing those things. But that's how it was literally held together with duct tape, that building. And that was the impetus to say we need to get a better building. And the arts, unfortunately, don't have a connection to industry like engineering has or computer science has, right? So it needs advocates in order to raise the funds to build the building.
It's incredibly important. I mean, I think this is true of high schools as well as college. The art and the music and the poetry is so important to being human.
Right, it is. And unfortunately, there's a school of thought that says everything that you study has to be associated with a job. So you get this degree and you go out and you get a job. It's important that you go out and you get a job. But I think to create the whole human being, you need to have the arts, you need to have literature, you need to have all of this. Because otherwise you're just this machine that's doing this work that you were, this information was put into your head and you go out and you do this work. But how does that make you a human being?
Yeah.
I of course agree with you as a poet and photographer, but that view seems endangered in our current society. How do we fight that?
It is. And I think we just have to keep people like us who believe in the arts need to keep talking, need to raise our voices and be heard. Because if we don't, we are heading in that direction where everything is about your degree has to correspond to a job. And by the way, the arts does produce a lot of revenue for our state. The arts produces a lot of revenue for our state. And we just have to learn to leverage that. And we artists typically are very reticent about talking about themselves. And so I think that's part of why we are lucky that we have a state where art is valued. Art of every form is valued. And so we are better off than some other states, I think, in that sense.
So what can we look forward to from you? You know, you're talking about this, the legislative session is coming up, but then just this year as a regent, are there any decisions? And I mean, you mentioned the strategic plan, but anything else?
Yes. So the strategic plan is the most important thing that we are working on right now. Mm-hmm. And so I think we are just about, I think we have a few more left of the forums that we are doing, talking to stakeholders, maybe three left. And then we actually start with the formulating the plan, because the external stakeholders are important. The internal stakeholders are also important because they are the ones that actually live it, right, from day to day. So we are very excited about what that plan is going to look like. We are very excited about our new athletic director and what he can bring, the kind of attention that he can bring to our university and to our state. We are really looking forward to having all of those interim positions filled, because we had several interim positions. Oh, I forgot to mention, we got a new CFO, so that was a position that was interim. So, you know, when you have all the right, getting all the right people in the right jobs is really important, and that's a process that we are working through right now. And you can look forward to a really robust university.
Good. Well, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.